WMNF 88.52.
First of all, that what you are doing is monumental. And this is not easy. And you all are literally, with this show, you have literally created something out of nothing. And everybody can't do that. What I think is so unique about you all is that when I'm listening to you all, because there are things that I don't know about your world, you all have a wholly different kind of conversation. You have no ideas what your conversation feels like to my ears. It's so different. Because I don't have the opportunity and hear how you guys philosophize about reality. This is the only place that I get that in my entire life. What you do is significant because I'm not alone in it. A whole lot of folk over 40 years of age don't have that experience. Their kids are out of the house and grown. When I think of you all as giving us a perspective on popular culture. Not just what's happening, because Entertainment Tonight will tell us what's happening, but you are also giving us perspective on how it impacts real people's lives. And that's the qualitative difference in what you're doing.
You're about to listen to the Urban Cafe.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah.
Good morning, Tampa Bay. Welcome. You're listening to the Urban Cafe on WMNF 88.5. We've got a full studio here today with all my fellow colleagues. Let's start off around with Joe.
Hey, what's up, guys? Good morning. Good morning.
Jamal.
What's going on? Michigan football is 10-1. Let's go.
Oh, God. Let's not start.
What's up, Tampa Bay? This is your homie, Prince.
There you go.
I guess that'll work. What's up, Tampa? I got to remember to turn the mic on. What's up, Tampa? Wake this your boy, up. Prince.
Good morning. Good morning, Tampa. This is Nestor with Duality of Sorts.
Good morning, Tampa Bay. It's a beautiful day out there. Enjoy it.
All right. And that was Claire. Haven't seen Claire in a little while. Good to have you back.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you all for listening in. For those of you trying to find us on Facebook today we don't have the Facebook Live, but you can definitely obviously tune in on WMNF 88.5 here in the local Tampa Bay area, or you can go to the WMNF website and click on the live stream and listen to us. Also, in order to participate for commentary, if you want to give us a call, 813-239-9663. That is our WMNF phone line. And you can also text us at 813-433-0885. We will be able to receive texts today. And so with that being said, we got a full studio today. And we're all probably in like a post-election funk, I would say.
Yeah.
We're not going to take the whole show to talk about elections, you know, but the reality is that the election recount does end today at noon. And as it looks right now, the Governor Scott is currently going to possibly most likely win the election for U.S. Senate against Bill Nelson. There's definitely one of the things I want to put out there. There was no fraud. So regardless of the fact which party wins. Nestor can talk a little bit about this.
Super frustrating.
Yeah.
So regardless of what some of the politicians have been saying at the executive branch and other politicians, there was no fraud. It's been stated in the courts here locally in the state of Florida. And so the election results are, you know, this is going to be 100% validated. I do want to talk about the cluster in Broward County. So what ended up happening in Broward County, for those of you who are not aware, which is in South Florida, each electoral area has their own electoral commissioner. And so the commissioner of Broward County has been under a lot of fire for various reasons, many of them valid. And so as it turns out, they send out sample ballots. The sample ballot that Broward County sent out was not the correct sample ballot. They sent an incorrect sample ballot out. So just to even begin the electoral season, they sent the wrong ballot out to the people in Broward County, to the constituents. Then the second thing that happened is in the state of Florida, the way it works is when you look at your ballot, it starts from the top. It starts with the highest office. In this case, for this election, for the midterm election, it was the U.S. Senate. So you had Nelson and Scott at the very top of the ballot. However, the Broward County ballot put in the very left-hand side, they put instructions on how to fill out your ballot. And right underneath the instructions, they put the U.S. Senate choices underneath the instructions. As it turns out, over 20,000 people did not fill out the U.S. Senate portion of their ballot in Broward County because they thought it was blended in with the instructions. Oh, so there's all these reports of over 20,000 ballots not being read correctly by the machine. Well, they were read correctly by the machine. It's just there wasn't an option selected because people skipped over it. Now, the fact that the constituents didn't realize that they did not fill out a U.S. Senate, which was probably the highest, how would you say that? It was definitely the most visible, you know, it was the most money out of any Senate race in the country is put into the state of Florida. There's commercials everywhere. All our mailboxes were filled in with, you know, a bunch of crap regarding that race. And for the fact that 20,000 people may have skipped over that portion on the ballot is unexcusable, in my opinion.
And to think about how many people belong to a certain party in Broward, to me that's
absolutely right,
absolutely awful.
And why did they do the format that way? And by the way, I'd like to add, they make these things, the type size is so small, even with a magnifying glass it's hard to read. So you got all these people trying to read this stuff.
I mean, there's a whole, definitely, I agree with you, Clara, for sure. And then and what Nelson was alluding to was basically that demographically, for probably decades now, Broward County has been a heavily Democratic county. And 20,000 missing votes for a U.S. Senate race would definitely have turned the race, would most likely have turned the race, I should say. But it is what it is. They didn't vote. The recount ends today at 12. Governor Scott is currently up by a little over 12,000 votes, and it doesn't look like Nelson is going to be able to catch up on that. And so Governor Scott does look like the next U.S. Senator for the state of Florida. So congratulations to Governor Scott.
According to him, there was rampant fraud.
Yes, according to him.
Just putting that out there.
So I do want to, it hasn't been declared yet, but in prelude, I want to congratulate Governor Scott on his race. Also, here locally in Tampa, there was a recount for Janet Cruz and Dana Young. And Nelson, do you want to talk about that real quick?
Nestor.
Nestor, sorry.
It's all good. It's all good because we were just talking about Nelson. Yes, Janet Cruz seems to have won by a wide margin of 382 votes.
Every vote counts.
Every single vote counts. So if you went out there and you voted, thank you so much. If you did not vote, know that there are politicians getting into office based on just a few votes. Mm-hmm. So races are close, so everybody should get out there and vote. But she won by 382 votes.
And sometimes that is all it takes, 382 votes. You know, it's the slimmest of margins.
So congratulations to Janet Cruz, and thank you for your service, Dana Young.
Yeah, I agree with that. Well, and so, go
ahead. I'm not congratulating nobody. I'll let you guys do that. I'm not going to congratulate people who have won these. One thing I'm trying to figure out is, all right, so how do we have these missing ballots? I mean, like, what is going on?
Well, the ballot wasn't missing. What was missing that, and so the state of Florida, and I'm going to go on the Wayback Machine to the Al Gore election, right? Mm-hmm. So one of the issues that had happened is what they called the hanging chads. So they used to punch the ballots in some counties.
No. I'm looking here. I mean, you can look at all. No. There are supervisors of elections in certain counties who are trying to find missing ballots. Oh. Like, they were in boxes. Yeah. Like, oh, it's over here. I don't know where it's at.
There was a story where a teacher came into a school and found a box of ballots that hadn't been turned in. Right. What the heck? Who was in charge of that?
Well, but this is all anecdotal, you know? So, you know, where's the actual evidence? Just because people may post stuff online or there may be an article from somewhere, you know, was it reported to the police?
I would like to add that this is not just in Florida, because I used to run voter polls in California, and there were horror stories where the inspector of the voter poll took his people out to dinner after the polls were closed, and they never did deliver the ballots. Or another one was where somebody threw the ballots into a dumpster. I mean, these are not just isolated situations in Florida. It happens nationwide where one or two people who are just, I don't know what their game is, but they kind of screw with the voting thing. And it's not okay.
And we need to come up with you know, is every system going to be 100% foolproof? You know, there you're always going to have, you know, a plus or minus margin of error. But, you know, when we're talking about elections that are being won by 382 votes,
right?
You know, that plus or minus margin of error becomes very, very small.
Right. And then to Josh, to the point, I'm looking here at the Sun Sentinel, that's South Florida newspaper. And the supervisor election is admitting the head count is not matching the vote count. And there's 2,000 at this time. This was on the 17th. Yesterday, there were 2,040 missing ballots. And she, all she can say is the ballots are somewhere. I know they're in the building.
Oh. And that's unacceptable. That's absolutely unacceptable. Another thing that's unacceptable is the absolute. So the state of Florida has a lot of U.S. military based out of here, mm-hmm. and so a lot of them, you know, are abroad right now, mm-hmm. on assignment, and so they issue what they call absentee ballots, and so they mail those in, and so those absentee ballots by law just need to be postmarked. In most states, with the day of the elections. I believe in the state of Florida, the postmark is actually, it has to be a couple of days prior to the election. And so with that being said, it's very important that, you know, our officials in charge of the elections also keep in mind that the absentee ballots, every vote needs to be counted. Yeah, traditionally, military ballots have traditionally run Republican. And so what? They still need to be counted. These are men and women Absolutely. Who are serving our country, and they have a right to vote, and their vote should be counted, unlike what some of the folks were saying on CNN and on Fox and on other channels. They were saying, there is rampant fraud for these absentee ballots. Well, that's just, you know, that's not necessarily the case. Where is the actual evidence behind this fraud?
I think negligence would have been a better word, not fraud. Just negligence on some person's part that didn't deliver.
No, fraud was a perfect word. He did exactly what he had to do. That's part of the Constitution. And part of the, if you allege, that's why, I mean.
Wait. Who did exactly what he was supposed to do?
Scott. Yeah, you're supposed to say voter fraud, because voter fraud is something that's why we have all these voter ID laws and whatnot, because people are always alleging voter fraud per se, when we know there's not really voter fraud, but they allege that that way they can have all these voter ID laws for which would disenfranchise people.
Okay.
Right. So I'm saying,
yeah, you're right. From a strategy perspective, he did right by himself. Right.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
And for his party.
Right.
But it was definitely the wrong thing to do.
Yes. And so we have our first caller of the morning. Caller, we don't have anybody screening our calls today. So when you come up on air, please announce your name and where you're from. Caller, you're on the air. What is your name?
Hello, my name is Miss Queen Wilson, and I couldn't get the WMNF on the regular channel, so I tried to call you. I'm calling the DJ now.
Yes, ma'am. You're calling the Urban Cafe. You're calling the Urban Cafe show. You're live on the air.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry, but I could not, on the regular station, on my cell phone, WMNF was not playing. So I called the DJ, and that's how I could hear actually something going on WMNF. Something is wrong.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you for letting us know, ma'am. I'll have to talk to the studio engineer to take a look at that. We apologize for any inconvenience you're having right now. Thank you for letting us know, though. I appreciate it. And so, again, you're listening to the Urban Cafe on WMNF 88.5. We were talking a little bit about the election hangover and the results that are due here at noon today. And shortly after that, there's an expectation that the final results will be announced after that.
Hey, real quick, why do we have election? This is a funny thing about this. Why do we have cutoffs for the recounts and whatnot? Because people don't assume office to what? 3-4 months, you typically, right? Well, 2 months.
Yeah.
So why is there
a election rush
the transition from transition teams, from my experience dealing with politicians, I mean, look, the guys can figure things out in a month or so. I have no idea why we have such a quick recount cutoff deadline.
You know, I asked myself that too. I just honestly mm-hmm. don't know. And if anybody any of our listeners know the answer to Jamal's question, definitely feel free to call us at 813-239-9663. With that being said, we're going to go to a quick break here and then come back and continue our discussion.
Tell me what's done in the dark, we'll find a way to shine. I done did so much that when you see, you might go blind. What's done in the dark, we'll always find a way to shine. I done did so much that when you see, you might go blind.
Hi, this is Chuck Core Jr., host of Flashback Friday. I'm not single, but I love to mingle. Mingle with me each and every Friday from 10 to midnight. The best in blues, R&B, and Southern soul. Let me be the last man to put something in your ear hole. WMNF Tampa, the right station on the left-hand side of your dial. 88.5 FM.
The ukulele, once a novelty instrument from Hawaii, is now one of the hottest instruments in rock. There will be a dozen ukulele performers, including Apple Butter Express Duo and Rebecca Pulley. Plus, there's a Beatles jam open to all ukulele players and the premiere of the Florida Ukulele Orchestra. WMNF's 4th Annual Ukulele Festival, Saturday, December 1st at Cage Brewing in St. Pete. Doors open at 3. Tickets $12 advance. Kids 12 and under free. Go to WMNF.org.
Two worlds. Indigenous radio.
I'm afraid white America is incapable of understanding.
Every Sunday night from 9 to 11 p.m. Join me. My name is Al Vaughn. I'll be your host for the 2 hours of Two Worlds, getting the music played, getting the stories told. And every other Sunday, I'll be joined by Emily Jeffries.
It takes warrior women with strong minds.
Hosting Voices of Our People, letting you know a little bit about what's going on in Indian country. Two Worlds, Indigenous Radio, standing in solidarity with the indigenous people of this continent. Sunday, 9 p.m. to 11 p.m.
Welcome back.
I know you like that. Claire's doing her dance, her jiggy. All right, welcome back to the Urban Cafe on WMNF 88.5. My name is Joshua. Thank you for listening to us and plugging in this early on a Sunday morning. A little chilly this weekend here in the Tampa Bay. I have my jacket on.
It feels wonderful.
It's beautiful. Gosh.
It feels great.
Yeah. It does feel pretty good.
It's autumn. It's the way it's supposed to feel, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But we don't get that color change here. I kind of miss that, you know, with
we'll
the brown leaves.
We'll have to wear different color clothes.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, you're like the second person who's mentioned that to me. That's funny. So for those of you, you know, who live in Florida, we know that the leaves don't turn. So Claire is suggesting that we just, you know, wear the autumn clothes anyway.
Yeah, there you go.
And so with that being said, we covered a little bit of the election hangover and that should all be resolved today. I want to switch subjects real quick. And I want to talk about the fact that the CIA yesterday, CNN reported yesterday that the CIA has concluded that Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman personally ordered the killing of journalist Jamal Khashoggi, despite the Saudi government's denials that the de facto ruler was involved. And this is according to a U.S. senior U.S. official who was anonymously reporting on the matter. And so why does this matter? That's, I'm sure all of you are asking that. So why does this matter? Because a U.S.-based journalist with children, he was living in Virginia. He has contributed to the Washington Post. His children were born in the United States and they're U.S. citizens. He used to be actually a Saudi family royal insider, so he was on their side, but then he became a critic of the Saudi royal family. And as it turns out, it looks like the de facto ruler, the soon-to-be king of Saudi Arabia, otherwise known by his initials as MBS, had him killed in a consulate in Turkey. His body apparently dismembered, taken out in diplomatic bags, and no one has any evidence of his body. And so why does this matter? Because the U.S. Constitution, we have the freedom of speech, and free press is protected under that. And so, yes, Jamal Khashoggi was not a U.S. citizen. However, he was based out of the U.S., and we have evidence, strong evidence, to conclude, our own Central Intelligence Agency has concluded that the next leader of Saudi Arabia had him killed because he didn't like what he had to say about MBS or Saudi Arabia. And so that's a very significant issue, the fact that it happened in Turkey. So now we have both Turkey and Saudi Arabia, which are allies to the United States, very important for us economically, strategically, militarily. They are at ends. Turkey is very upset that this murder happened on their land. Both countries are apparently ruled by, you know, autocratic leaders at this point in time. So where does that leave us as a country? What can we do? What will our leadership do to put an end to this?
And the question for me is, what will our leaders do when right now we have a weapons deal that we have in the works with Saudi Arabia for $110 billion over the next year and $350 billion over the next 10 years?
Right.
So the question for me becomes, we now have, 45 is now in a position where he has to make a decision on what is Khashoggi's life worth? Do we still move forward with this deal, or do we impose some other things on MBS? We don't know, but I feel like I have my guesses on what's going to happen. But
yeah, without a doubt. And yeah. And again, you know, Saudi Arabia. How many was it? The 9/11 attackers?
Like close to 30.
So there was 19 total that were actually on the planes, and I want to say like 15 of them were actually Saudi Arabian citizens.
Exactly.
And so I'm not saying Saudi Arabia is a state sponsor of terrorism, such as like Iran. But at what point, you know, here we are 20 years later, and they're, you know, killing, you know, journalists because they disagree with that, what that journalist has to say about them. And so it's a very, very interesting dynamic. And you know, I kind of agree with Nelson. I really don't feel like much is going to be done because the economic interests are so vast.
Mm-hmm.
Not just the $110 billion arms deal, but also we have the issue with oil, right? Saudi Arabia is a prominent member of OPEC, and so which is the petroleum exporting countries, and so they have a cartel over oil prices, you know, and they determine how much is produced, how much is not produced, and subsequently that affects the entire world. Mm-hmm. And although the U.S. little by little is becoming more oil independent, but the reality is that we do rely on the global trade of oil. And so I just wanted to put that out there for our listeners to understand the impact of how a murder, what some people may consider a small murder or something that happened in a foreign country, really has international implications across, you know, Europe, because, yep, you know, NATO, Turkey's a member of NATO, you know, Saudi Arabia, which is one of our staunchest allies in the war against terror.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and then also, you know, how is the United States seen? Is the United States going to put its foot down? Is it just going to let this slide? Are we going to find a way to just punish? Are we going to take Saudi Arabia's word saying that no, MBS was not involved? It was only some people very close to him, which they've come out and they've already said that they're going to try these people against the capital punishment in Saudi Arabia. I want to say 7 people have been arrested for this. Mm-hmm. And so
I heard on the way to the station this morning that Congress wants our president to do something a little stronger than what he's doing. Has anybody heard anything
and
about that?
He's going to be under a lot of pressure because the world is now looking at us. The relationship that we have with Saudi Arabia, it's like Velcro. It's impossible to separate ourselves from that. We now have a country where, as you mentioned, the next leader sanctioned a murder. So how do you get away from that? And mm-hmm. And so what do you do? He's going to become the leader, and everyone is going to know that this person had somebody else executed
in another country.
You don't do that. But the thing,
not
the same
even
thing,
in his backyard.
But the same thing happened in North Korea with Kim Jong-un. Like he had a family member executed, and he's still in office. Yep. He's not going to go to jail. You know, this person in Saudi Arabia, he's not going to go to jail.
Yeah.
No, and for me, I think what happens in their country, they can figure out, right? But what our reaction or response to it is what concerns me. And if we excuse it once,
yes,
then what says that any other country can't do the same thing?
Totally,
and as long
agree.
As we have a deal going on, they know they can get away with it. So it's like, this is that principled move. This is that moment where he has an opportunity to make a hard stance decision and say, despite all of this money looming over this deal, this is way more important. Principally, this is way more important.
You know, and ironically, you were talking about state-sponsored murder or state-sponsored killing. Mm-hmm. The United States sometimes gets a little indignant when other countries do it. But we forget. We did it ourselves. We've had other duly elected leaders of other countries killed. You know, for lack of a, you know, clean-up word, we had them killed, you know, in other countries. And, you know, simply because we needed to do regime change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Seriously, we needed to do regime change.
Because we do it all the time.
We do it all the time, exactly.
Whether it's Nicaragua, whether we go look at what happened in Africa, something like who the...
We have Chile, Salvador Allende, Chile in the 70s.
Oh yeah, or whether we look at it and say, look, Saddam Hussein, we don't like what you're doing, so we're going to do military to do it. I mean, in countless others, I would say, and it's just me talking, but that's at least three. Hell, we might have done it 10 times.
And we know our history, you know.
Sure,
we've been, for generations, we've been putting these people in position and then deciding after they get there, going, oh no, we don't like what you're doing anymore. You've gone rogue on us and we want to get rid of you.
Panama.
Yeah. This is the way the game plays.
Castro.
It's not a good game.
We didn't kill, but Castro, like,
Castro was uncontrollable.
He's uncontrollable.
That's my man. He was uncontrollable.
I mean, there's over 50 reported incidents.
60.
60 reported incidents.
Trying to assassinate Fidel Castro.
Exactly.
Wow.
Castro went out on his own terms.
Wow. Yeah. Castro's kind of a G. 60
he was
times?
G. He was OG.
My goodness.
He was kind of a G.
Wow.
So and again, this is just, you know, to inform our listeners, nothing we're seeing here is really opinion. This is all fact. It can be looked up. And so just be an informed listener. And it is, you know, in my mind, a little hypocritical on behalf of the United States. But at the same time, what can we do as constituents to make sure that our government is accountable for the values that we hold dear?
Well, I was seeing this video where Trump had bragged he made, you know, hundreds of million dollars with the Saudis. So he has his own personal influence in there as
well. Exactly. Mm.
Allegedly.
Conflict of interest.
No.
I know. He did say that.
He said it.
Yeah.
So, I mean.
Yeah. But then, you know, there's other instances of him denying that he has nothing to do. And you know, so, but we haven't seen his taxes yet.
Right. That's exactly what I was thinking.
We might in January.
Let's see his taxes. I guarantee you,
however they spin it. And they are going to spend this. You got people right now just huddling and playing out different scenarios. And then they, you know, put forth a scenario and they put it through test to see how well it can defend itself. And so once they settle on a spin that they put it out to the public, there's going to be a couple of weeks of grumbling. And then something else is going to come up. Some sporting event is going to come up. Mm-hmm. Or somebody is going to, you know, God forbid, mass shooting or something like that.
Squirrel.
And then you know, your attention is going to move away from that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's it.
I wanted to say something that relating to that. That's why Urban Cafe is on the air. Because maybe we can help clear up some of the spin that goes on out there. So people keep listening to us and keep sharing us and call in.
Yeah, and call in 813-239-9663 if you want to participate in today's conversation. Right now we're talking about the implications of an international murder and how that affects politics here. Some of the other things I've read is, so say the U.S., takes a hardline stance against Saudi Arabia, and that we end up determining that, yes, what the CIA concluded is accurate, that MBS did order the assassination of Jamal Khashoggi, and we take a hardline stance against them. So then what Saudi Arabia is doing is they're hedging their bets, and they're moving towards China. And so they're saying, oh, we're getting a rebuke from the United States, who for the past 70 years have been one of our staunchest allies, and they're saying they don't like how we do business, which is business of murder. And so now they basically blackmailed the United States saying, oh, you don't want to deal with us? We're going to continue to buy arms from China. We're going to sell more of our oil to China. And so in China is, again, an autocratic leadership. They actually just changed their constitution to allow their president to have an uninterrupted lifetime appointment, president for life. And so, and that literally happened in the past year.
Oh,
so,
my gosh.
So the president of China is only going to sit down if he wants to sit down, which is, you know, since the communist revolution under Mao, this is the first time this has ever happened. Mm. And so, again, another autocratic ruler, you know, something that Prince mentioned, you know, in North Korea, we have an autocratic ruler who killed his brother via a poisonous assassination attempt at an airport in Singapore. And so, again, another international murder. Turkey has an autocratic ruler. Saudi Arabia has an autocratic ruler. And we, right now, our foreign policy seems to be leading more and more towards being in sync with these. And we're pushing away from France. We're pushing away from Germany. You know, look what happened during the World War One, the Great War, 100-year the celebration of the armistice, I should say. And so where, you know, our executive in chief was basically, you know, sitting on the sidelines, so to speak, of what should have been a great commemoration for all those fallen heroes during the Great War. And so it's a very interesting conversation we're having here. With that, we'll wrap up the conversation about Jamal Khashoggi. I highly encourage our listeners to look up information on your favorite search engine, be it Bing, Google, Yahoo, whatever it may be. Look up what's going on. It's very good for you to be informed of not just local events like our elections, but also what's going on the international scale, just to be an informed a constituent and an informed citizen of this country. And so with that being said, let's talk a little bit more about, we got duality of sorts in the house. And so I found it fascinating that you're putting up these videos on Facebook and YouTube. And it's really a great conversation about civility and where are we headed? Where should we be headed as members of the society, right? Here and I find that a lot of what you talk about is not just for the United States, but just as human civilization. Mm-hmm. Before we jump into that real quick, we do have a caller. Let's jump to our caller here real quick. Caller, tell us your name and where you're calling us from. You're on the air, caller.
Hey, my name's Nick. I live in St. Pete.
Hey, Nick. How you
doing?
Hey,
Nick.
I am perfect. I'm just going to pray for you because you're ate up with hate. Have a good day.
Because we're what, sorry?
Something we're ate up by hate.
He said we're ate up by hate.
Oh, we're ate up by hate.
Ate up by hate. Okay. I wonder why that's happening.
I don't know if that's the caller calling back again. Hello, caller. Caller, you're on the air. What is your name?
I'm sorry?
You're on the air. Good morning. What is your name?
Good morning, Carla Biscardi.
Good morning, Carla.
I was thinking about what y'all had said about the Governor Scott.
Mm-hmm. What did we say specifically, ma'am?
Okay, you guys were talking about, I didn't get the whole thing, but how they're delaying that there's a time limit for the count.
Yeah, so right. we had a question on, and Jamal put forth this question on why is it that there's this, what appears to be an arbitrary time deadline on the electoral results, on the recount, and we just didn't know the answer to that. Do you have more information?
Right. No, I don't. Unfortunately, I don't. But it seems odd that he would request something like that only because he's recognizing or realizing that he may not be winning. And I find it very hard to believe that. I mean, this man is also he is a convicted felony, isn't he?
No, he's not a convicted felon. Actually, he did step down as the CEO of HCA, and he did plead the fifth 75 times, I believe, but he was never convicted.
Yeah, I laugh about that too.
And so for our listeners out there, our callers alluding to, and this was played out a lot in Governor Scott's first attempt to run for office 8 years ago. And so his company at the time, and it still may hold the record for the largest Medicare fraud.
Yep. He does.
It does hold the record. Yep. It was over $300 million. And so to the caller's point, there were people convicted, but they never were able to pin it on Scott. Mm-hmm. And he did plead the fifth 75 times, which is basically his right to not self-incriminate and under oath. And so,
yeah, and see, that's the problem with America, a place like Florida. You see, what happens is, I mean, you guys know, like, I'm a Democrat, but I'm really much more progressive. But okay, people who know this information, I wasn't in Florida at this time, so you know that, and a lot of these people don't have resources where Medicaid or Medicare can benefit them. You know, this man was involved with the company, and he pleaded for 75 million times, 75 times, and all these millions of dollars. But then why do people vote for him knowing that? And that just comes down to, I guess, people's individual, their own personal beliefs.
I think it's short memory. I think it's short memory. People don't remember history.
Yeah.
They don't.
You know, it's similar to our current president, where people, in my opinion, people saw him as a self-made man. He made millions of dollars. He financed his own campaign.
He was a privileged person, wasn't he?
To a point.
He had millions.
We're talking about his family's in real estate.
His family's in real estate. But he created his own company. It became a multi-million dollar company, one of the largest healthcare organizations, at least in the state of Florida. And actually, after he left the company, they continued to do a lot of mergers and acquisitions.
Well, did you know that HCA is... Columbia HCA, whatever they call it. I don't know what they call it anymore. It was a lot of Mormon. It was a Mormon corporation.
It was a Latter-day Saints?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. I worked for them at that time. I actually was working at a hospital, a county hospital, and then our local hospital was HCA. Offered me a job I couldn't refuse. And in my first day, I'm reading the handbook and says, we don't take people from other companies. I'm like, what? You just doubled my salary to get me away from somebody else. And then during the time I was there, they were divesting the two hospitals. They had gotten, I was like one of the cards they needed. I did senior services. And then they had a nice little deck of cards, so to speak, to present. Look at these hospitals. Let's sell them. They couldn't sell them, so they divested them. But they told one hospital that I worked for that they were divesting. They didn't tell the other hospital.
Interesting.
And so I sent an email to Scott and to my CEO. I said, why aren't you telling your 300 employees plus the community that you're what you're doing, and my services were no longer needed.
Interesting.
Within a half hour.
Wow, within a half hour.
Yeah.
Within a half hour?
Yeah.
They work quick.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
We have a couple callers. Our lines are, this conversation is obviously hitting some nerves in our listeners. Caller, again, we don't have anybody screening calls today, so when you come on, please state your name and where you're from. Caller, you're on the air.
Yeah, it's Bruce from St. Petersburg.
Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning, Bruce.
I'm with the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign, and one of the things that I think we need to point out is in regards to foreign policy, and really, in effect, what actually happens domestically, there is no real difference between the two parties. It's just that Trump has been the epitome of what happens when we continue to allow two parties to be controlled by big money. Mm-hmm. That is the culmination of it.
Mm-hmm.
It is the tip of the iceberg of the real problem, which is capitalism. And until we honestly look at that, we're not going to see any real changes. Because let's remember that what happened under Bush and even Obama. Black Lives Matter started during Obama's time as president. Fight for 15 started then. The Occupy movement started then. So we need to look at the reality of the both parties. Now, he is horrible, without question, Trump is, and his rhetoric especially. But foreign policy-wise, he is doing nothing more than what is a continuation of the neocon, neoliberal policy, foreign policy-wise. And I think there has to be an honest look at that and not just continue to be anti-Trump. We need to be anti-capitalist. We need to be anti-corporate parties, because that is fundamentally the problem here. And he is merely the culmination of that kind of situation. both parties created the conditions for a Trump to emerge.
And that's a fascinating take.
Yes, it is.
Bruce, I wanted you to possibly stay on hold after the call. I wanted to get your information to talk to you more about some of the work you're doing out there in St. Pete and see maybe we could, you know, talk to you more or maybe another show as well.
Yeah, love to.
Okay.
And I think, you know, you bring up a great discussion. You know, there's obviously the Citizens United, which basically the Supreme Court upheld the Citizens United law saying that corporations have the right to be treated as citizens, not just like anybody else. But that's because that was the interpretation of the Constitution based on a law that was passed at the U.S. federal legislature level, right? So what would need to happen is they would have to basically pass another law rescinding the foundation of what ended up being the Supreme Court ruling of Citizens United. I personally think it needs to be a balance. Like, you know, capitalism has its pros. But at the same time, we definitely have a need in society to be able to, I believe we should be able to help improve the lives of those around us. I think it's going to be that combination, not getting rid of capitalism, but improving it somehow.
The thing about it is that every single country has some form of capitalism, some form of socialism, and even some form of communism. It's just that this country is, you know, the first and foremost, the banner is capitalism. And so with that, everyone needs to prosper. But capitalism creates the greatest level of imbalance between wealthy and poor people mm-hmm. around the world. Mm-hmm. Socialism seeks to balance that out. Communism seeks to eliminate it completely. Mm-hmm. And so you mentioned there has to be a balance. But the thing about this country is folks are entrenched in terminology. As soon as you start talking about capitalism, as soon as you start talking about the Second Amendment, you know, the folks automatically become polarized. And so you have to have that discussion. And we mentioned this the last time we was talking about mm-hmm. duality of sorts. Mm-hmm. You have to have the discussion without mentioning those buzzwords, mm-hmm. you know, in order for meaningful conversation for folks to ingest and digest the narrative that's being discussed. Now, regarding corporations, we were talking about that. I personally believe that the biggest mistake the United States made in the 14th Amendment was granting corporations citizenship. I did a study a couple of years ago. This was when I was in college. From the time period that the 14th Amendment was passed, nearly 90% of the lawsuits that made its way to the Supreme Court on that issue alone, on citizenship, because it's, you know, the 14th Amendment also granted black people citizenship in the United States. Mm-hmm. 90% of the cases that went to the Supreme Court were not to affirm the citizenship of black people in this country. That was actually less than one half of 1%. The remaining lawsuits that went to the Supreme Court was to defend and or affirm corporations' right to become citizens.
Because they have the money to do it.
Once that happened, corporations became, it's like VIP, and then there's a level above VIP. You know, corporations are that level, beyond VIP. How is it that a GM can exist in multiple places? You and I cannot do that. A corporation legally can exist in multiple locations. They can commit a crime. They won't go to jail. You and I will. Mm-hmm. So if you're a citizen, you have to be treated with equal rights. And that's what, you know, everybody's talking about, equal rights. But corporations, a CEO of a corporation, when a corporation commits a crime, the CEO doesn't go to jail.
Mm-hmm. You're making me think of Enron.
What's the other one? MCI, the telephone company, MCI. All of these companies that committed.
Yeah, I think it was massive. WorldCom.
WorldCom, but it was MCI WorldCom.
Yeah.
Before they became WorldCom, there was MCI.
Correct.
And I can't remember the person who was making all kinds of high level flamboyant, mm-hmm. you know, mergers and acquisitions. But 14th Amendment, that has to be adjusted. The portion of the 14th Amendment that addresses corporations as citizens mm-hmm. has to be adjusted.
That's interesting. So we're going to go to a quick break, but we'll come back and talk a little further about the 14th Amendment, because we also have where 45 was talking about removing the constitutionally granted right, if someone is born in U.S. soil, that they become an automatic U.S. citizen based
that's
on...
That's me. That I was. It took me a while to realize that, but that's me. I'm first-generation American.
Yeah.
Both of my parents are Cuban.
Exactly. And so we can talk about the special circumstances around Cuban dissidents versus other Latin Americans.
Oh,
and
you really
so
want to go there?
We can talk a little bit about that.
Do
we
really want to go there?
Yeah. But with that, again, we're having some very interesting conversations here today in the studio. You're listening to The Urban Cafe on WMNF 88.5. We're going to go to another break, and then when we come back, we'll continue this conversation.
Looking for restoration for your funk deprivation? Join us where we're one nation under a groove at the house party. Saturdays from 9 to 11 p.m. on 88.5 FM WMNF. Put on your boogie shoes and come shake your pants and do your dance at the house party. Hosted by your man, DJ Sinflow. Again, Saturdays at 9 p.m. on 88.5 FM.
Support for WMNF comes from our members at the Florida Law Group, protecting the rights of the wrongly injured since 1984. The Florida Law Group is dedicated to creating strong and lasting connections with their clients and our community. More at thefloridalawgroup.com.
Welcome back.
Come on, Claire. Let's do our jiggy.
Welcome back, everybody. Have a good day. It's beautiful out there.
It's a beautiful morning.
Good day to go ride your bike or cruise.
Oh, that's nice. Yes. That would be nice.
A cruise would be good.
Take your dog for a walk. So,
anything like that.
Yeah. So again, good morning, everybody. Buenos dias, Tampa Bay. You listen to The Urban Cafe on WMNF 88.5. We got Claire, Joe, Jamal, Prince, Mr. Ortiz
in the house. What up, what up?
Nesta.
So,
happy to have him here.
So we had some very interesting conversations about the 14th Amendment. I'm not a constitutional scholar, and so I may want to stay out of this conversation. But I don't know. Do you have any last thoughts on that, Prince?
Yeah, no. Outside of that, my personal position is that corporations take advantage of their status.
I would agree.
To a criminal level, they take advantage of that status in terms of tax. Not paying their fair share of taxes. We don't have the level of tax cuts that are afforded to corporations, so their treatment in this country is on a different level that completely creates an imbalance between people and real people and corporations.
But you know, part of that
is people. You know, because I do have I know a little knowledge of taxes, not like a whole bunch, but I mean, people, we gotta just start educating ourselves about the tax system because I could imagine that the general public and population misses out on a lot of possible tax breaks.
Yeah, that's true. But that, you know, the same taxes or the credits that we can take are different for an individual than exist on a corporate level.
But someone could incorporate themselves.
There's certain credits that require a certain level of income.
That's
and
true.
We just don't qualify.
That's true.
I just want to add something. When you were talking about capitalism, you know, I don't know if any of you remember this. You're all kind of young. But in the 60s, we had the strike in support of the lettuce growers. It went nationwide. It was people using their money on a ground level, grassroots level, to control the corporations to get better facilities and better conditions for the lettuce workers. And it worked. And the thing was that If you realize that every penny you spend is supporting corporations, you can control where you put your money. You can have more control over corporations. And I'm talking about your investments, your purchases, whatever. Your money is your vote towards a corporation. If you control your money, you can control, have more voice in the corporation.
And just to set forth the standard, what we're talking about here for our listeners, again, on the Urban Cafe, according to the Cornell Legal Information Institute, based out of the Cornell Law School, the 14th Amendment addresses many aspects of citizenship and the rights of citizens. The most commonly used and frequently litigated phrase in the amendment is, quote, equal protection of the laws, unquote, which I believe is what Prince is alluding to. This quote figures prominently in a wide variety of landmark cases, including Brown versus the Board of Education, which was based on racial discrimination in the educational system. Roe v. Wade, which was about protective rights, specifically the right to be able to have abortions. Bush versus Gore, so the election recount. Reed versus Reed, which is a gender discrimination. And the University of California versus Bach, which was racial quotas in education. So these are all landmark cases that at one point and the other reference the 14th Amendment. So the 14th Amendment is significant, very significant and prominent in judicial proceedings and in everyday lives of citizens in this country.
Absolutely. And the last one that you mentioned about University of California, that was the, you know, you actually touched on two very important cases that impacted this country. Number one, Brown versus Board of Education. Right?
Yeah.
And then the University of California is like University of Cal Davis, I believe.
Yeah, but it was against the University of California system, actually.
But that was alleging reverse discrimination because of admissions quotas.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
So on the one hand, you have education discrimination with Brown versus Board of Education, and the first one to actually challenge that and put forth the notion of reverse discrimination. And it was interesting, you know, admission quotas, because a lot of universities use quotas to fill their seats.
Yeah, and so in the 14th Amendment has been a lot on the news a lot lately because the President of the United States, there's, I believe, 5 sections to this amendment. And Section 1 says all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof, comma, are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside, period. Mm-hmm. So that's the actual verbiage in that section of the Amendment 14. And so President of the United States has been alluding to possibly reversing that somehow,
either via
some type of executive order mechanism, which is kind of for debate, not really. A lot of constitutional scholars state that an executive order would not supersede the Constitution. Mm-hmm. Some people are talking about the actual intent behind that sentence that I just read, whereas the people who wrote the amendment intended for something else. And there's a lot of, and I won't be able to speak to it 100% clearly, but that comma that I alluded to is very interesting in the conversation about whether or not it meant that everybody born in the United States should have citizenship or not, because the placement of that comma within Section 1, apparently it has some illegal debate. Well, yeah, it's a very...
Who is questioning
there's
this?
There's some constitutional scholars.
Well,
yeah,
I don't care.
Fascinating.
You got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
But
all
the thing
is where the comma is placed.
Right, exactly. And that's and the folks, I mean, you and I know, you know, when you're dealing with law, contracts, and amendments, placement of certain punctuation is critical.
Yeah. Absolutely.
However, let's put ourselves in the time frame of the framers of that Constitution at that time. They intended it point blank. The nation was growing. We needed to grow.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone born in the United States was considered a citizen of the United States, period. Because if that's not the case, then the existing citizenry will eventually evaporate. You're going to die off. And who is going to replace you but your children? And so that is why, you know, that sentence is there. You know, it's intended for you're here, your children born here in this country are citizens of the United States. What if you're in the military and you're stationed in Germany, and you have a kid in Germany.
On a U.S. military base?
Either on a U.S. military base, or let's say you're off the base, and you're on an excursion in town. You're visiting Munich, and all of a sudden your water bursts. You have a baby there in the best hospital in Munich. Are you then a German citizen, or are you still a United States citizen?